Welcome to the ISF podcast from the Information Security Forum, featuring timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm your host, Tavia Gilbert. Today is the start of a new season focusing on disruption, and this time we'll have a mix of conversations between Steve and me, as well as a couple of timely interviews. Like seasons past, when we discussed the threat horizon, these are conversations to keep you up at night, but we'll try to temper the bad with the good, preparing you for the coming challenges and offering some good news in the mix as well. Let's review what's coming up this season. We'll start with a discussion on global totalitarianism and then move on to global cyber crisis. Writer and advisor Jonathan Brill will join you in conversation about rogue waves or the convergence of multiple disruptive threats, followed by a bit more hopeful conversation with Josh Jackson regarding the coming positive benefits of AI. So, Steve, why don't you set the stage for us? Let's start the conversation with a discussion about digital surveillance. I think this is a good starting point because it seems clear to both of us that no matter what the coming threat, every single person in the developed world is, in a sense, an unwitting enabler of accelerating disruption simply by interacting with proliferating and largely unregulated technology. Modern-day privacy is an oxymoron, and that is absolutely disruptive. Is that a fair statement, do you think?
I think one of the interesting things about the statement you just made, Tavia, is really around the whole issue of threat. As you rightly point out, you know, at the ISF, we've done a tremendous amount of work, and we continue to do that every year by producing our Threat Horizon report. And I think the industry, the cyber industry in general, is probably inclined to overuse the words risks and threats. What I mean by that is that the main problem is that people become not so much blasé about it, but it's very difficult to get anybody to really deal with those things before they arise, if I could put it that way. So planning horizons tend to be quite limited. They tend to be very short term, as we prefer generally to focus on, you know, shorter term tasks that are much more meaningful to us in the here and now. So when we start talking about things like digital surveillance, the way that things will evolve, it's quite difficult, I think, for people sometimes to get their heads around that. And a classic example of that would be the pandemic, COVID. It's not surprising that, you know, expert warnings about growing threats have been left almost unnoticed, even in that regard. You know, one of the recent warnings from a World at Risk report that the World Bank published with the assistance of the World Health Organization back in September 2019 highlighted, you know, the challenge or the threat of a global pandemic, which was predicted to possibly cause colossal consequences for the entire world. But it was too far out. People thought it wouldn't happen. And so there's a lot of parallels between what we talk about in the cyber environment and the situation that we find ourselves in at the moment, of course, because, you know, these sorts of things can be predicted, but is prediction enough? How do we actually make it come alive sufficiently for people to sit up and take notice? And that applies not just at the individual level, but also at the corporate level. And very often when we talk about security, of course, we're operating at both ends of that. Because as you know, I always talk about, you know, the strongest link in the security chain being the individual. And because we have transferred technology into the hands of the individual, we now access corporate technology through the individual tools and so on. There's been this blurring between who's responsible for what and where does the buck stop. So I think that, you know, the real challenge going forward is for us to, yes, identify some of the risks, identify some of the threats, but to be able to then convey them with an urgency, with a language that people can relate to, that people can understand. And those are some of the things I think that we try to do in this particular season. So, you know, disruption, yes, it is about things that are perhaps causing us to go off course, but not all disruption is bad.
Right.
You know, there is positive disruption.
Of course.
Which brings about, you know, very significant change. And so I think that it's important for us to get some of that balance right. Otherwise, we go down this very dreary rabbit hole where everything is very dark and gloomy. And so I think, as I say, that kind of balance is important. And we try to bring that in this season.
I think that's a good point that, yes, there are some benefits.
I wonder if you can see and share with our listeners your perspective on the benefits that are accompanying this disruptive moment. What are you looking forward to or seeing as an improvement because of this technology and all the different forces that are working on our world?
Well, I think there's a number of different areas where things are improving significantly. You know, I think that if we look at artificial intelligence is really bringing support to overworked, overstretched security teams. I think the challenge, though, on the other side is to use it appropriately, to be able to not be overcome by the potential that the technology has and to keep it under control. So I think that AI is a really positive element. I think that one of the other things about it that we've learned through the pandemic actually is that people are actually pretty good at communicating with each other remotely. And that opens up all sorts of opportunities from the security standpoint for us to get messages across to people about how they should be, you know, protecting their devices, protecting data, managing data and so on. And I think that, well, if you went back probably, 19, 20 months, people would have disagreed with that. People would have said, you know, you have to get people together. So, you know, technology and the way that it's behaved in that very, very disruptive period has really come into its own and shown what I would see as being pretty strong benefits there. So I think those are just two examples that immediately come to mind.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk for a moment about leadership, because we're going to cover a lot of ground in the next four episodes. And I would love to hear from you what kind of leadership this disruptive moment demands. Is there a different kind of quality or different qualities that wise and forward-thinking leaders need to embody that are specific to handling such sea changes globally and locally?
Yeah, I think there are. I think that one of the things that changes really significantly in the kind of environment that you're just describing is certainty. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, a lot of organizations, a lot of leaders have been working from a position of relative certainty. If I do A, then B will follow and therefore I'll achieve C, that kind of thing. I think in the environment that you're talking about, that isn't necessarily always the case. Mm. And it isn't actually in highly disruptive environments anyway, because things move so very much more quickly. So what does that mean? Well, it means that you have to be comfortable with shifting sands. You have to be agile. You have to be, I think, a little bit more transparent. Mm. You have to be more honest in terms of your own capabilities, because you're not going to get it right. You know, one thing is for certain, and that is that you won't get it right. So you have to rely on the skills of others. And I think that for some, that may be a, you know, seen as being a weakness. I've never actually held that view. I think that leadership is about, you know, really trying to get your team to play the game in the way that it needs to be played to achieve the end goals and objectives that you've set. And so it isn't about one individual. You know, I talk a lot about the leader being, you know, a coach rather than anything else, because it's about getting the best from the people that you've got around you to achieve the outcomes. And I think that in the kinds of environments that we're talking about, then yes, that ability to pivot, to be agile, to perhaps foresee to a certain extent some of the impacts of what you're doing, the direction that things are headed in, those all have become very, very much more important. And I think that a lot of people have either risen to that, they've enjoyed it, or they've absolutely hated it because it's a departure from the norm. Mm. But yeah, I think those are some of the things that are very different about it.
And do you think that boards are prepared to embrace that new style of leadership and leadership perspective that says, I'm not always going to get it right, and I need to be more transparent, more honest, and lead teams in these shifting sands? Or do boards have some work to do to change their mindset so that they are prepared for the disruptions?
I think some boards are getting there. I think that, again, you know, when we start to look at this, we get into looking at the different sorts of organizations that are out there. Some are obviously have a more agile perspective, and that obviously starts in the boardroom because the strategy reflects it and so on. Others have a much more traditional approach, which is, you know, all about shareholder value. And I'm not suggesting for a moment that that isn't important. Of course it is. But if you think about shareholder value in that hugely agile, turbulent environment, there needs to be very, very much more communication with the shareholder, perhaps, than there has been traditionally, because you need to be explaining why you're doing certain things. So I think that some boards have grasped that. Others have probably been a little bit more resistant to it. But I think that, you know, if we go forward, then it will simply become the way that we have to operate, the way that we have to work. And business tends to be full of natural selection. You know, it is a bit of a survival of the fittest. Mm-hmm. Those that are able to adapt will survive and thrive. Those that aren't, won't. It's as simple as that.
Mm. We've had some great conversations lately that have highlighted the need for diversity. Mm-hmm. And it seems like diversity is even more imperative in, as you said, turbulent times, that we need a breadth of experience and perspectives in leadership, not just a homogenous point of view that might have been acceptable in generations past, but that we really do need everybody's talent and wisdom to manage these coming colliding waves of quite significant disruption and changes in the world as we know it.
Yeah, I think that it's about challenge. And I think it is, you're right, about different perspective. And I think that those are two really important elements to bring to any leadership team, whether it be at the board level or indeed at a management team level. So I think those are really important components there. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we will be talking about in Rogue Waves in particular is about understanding where some of these challenges might come from, how they might combine. And so therefore, the various different possible routes to success within that very turbulent environment. And when we do talk about diversity, for me anyway, it's hugely broad reaching. I mean, it touches every aspect, you know, it's perhaps not just some of the more traditional elements of diversity, but it's entirely cultural as well, particularly if you're working for a multinational. You know, you have to get all of those different component pieces into your decision making. And I think that leaders of the future will be assembling those, you know, highly diverse teams with different perspectives that will challenge before reaching a conclusion around the direction that the business is going to be taking. And I think that will just become part of the way that we do business going forward.
Well, I think that might be yet another element of positive outcomes from disruption. So,
sure. Yeah.
Gives us more to look forward to. I know that this is not going to be a happy-go-lucky season, but we'll get through those conversations together. And we'll start next week with a discussion on lighthearted topic of digital totalitarianism. Here's a preview of that conversation.
You know, for some time now, personal information such as place of birth, residence, marital status, property has been collected. That's nothing new. But now the profile is overgrown with information from credit reporting companies, police databases, video surveillance systems, information about the nature of relationships with relatives, with neighbors, participation in charity, other events. And citizens are no longer required to consent, in a lot of instances, to the collection of information, which is happening nonstop over Wi-Fi networks, video cameras with face recognition technology, biometric scanners, QR codes, smart TVs, Alexa, your Apple Watch, or whatever you happen to be using. The list goes on and on and on. With the introduction of 5G technologies and the expansion of the range of AI applications, as I've mentioned, you know, any person's profile will be integrated with data from the Internet of Things, records from educational institutions, medical records, and so on, that's all pulled together in one place to give you that total picture at that single point in time of an individual, with algorithms that allow you not just to understand, as I say, what's happened in the past, but also to potentially predict the future.
Listeners, thank you so much for your support, positive feedback, and meaningful suggestions for new topics and interviews. Would you do one more thing to support the ISF podcast? If you can take a moment to rate and write a short review of the program, that will help us reach new listeners. It really does make a difference. If there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know by getting in touch at securityforum.org. While you're there, check out our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. Find us on LinkedIn by searching CEO Steve Durbin or Security Forum. Follow our audio feed wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll never miss an episode. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox and Tavia Gilbert. Music by Alexander Filipiak. Associate producer, Katie Flood. Mix and Master by Brian Barney. Thanks for listening.